Hey everybody, welcome to this week's podcast. I am here in New York City, downtown, with a good friend and a new friend. Justin Silver is the good friend that I've known for a while. Very funny comedian.
Thank you, Paul.
Dog expert, but funny comedian. That's his thing. That's what he does. We're going to talk about the dog stuff. And Dave Donenfeld, who I just met.
Good last name usage.
Huh?
You got there right away.
Well, you know, I did my homework. I did my research. And I was on your podcast, Funny for Fido, that you guys co-host. And
you were good.
And thanks, man. Well, you guys...
No, that was a good episode. Fantastic.
You were very nice to me and like let me talk and tell stories. Sometimes hosts don't want to hear the guests that much, so you guys were cool. And you're very smart, Dave. You have like a lawyer's mind. And you wrote a book with... Justin called The Language of Dogs. Justin,
you know, it's nice to be on it because on the podcast Funny for Fido, I'm labeled an autist and was told I have a criminal mindset.
So no, you have a...
This is I'm falling upstairs.
No, you... I was a lawyer at one time and you were throwing out legal terms. I'm like, holy shit, was this guy a lawyer? Like, I was like, you know, you and we were talking about free will. Man's free will versus dog's free will and all of that.
The cool thing is me and Dave have been partners for a while in terms of our dog business, but then after I had that show on CBS, the Dogs in the City show, we, you know, offers and production stuff comes in all the time and, you know, how agents and managers, how just sort of out to lunch they can be. Whenever we get stuff like that, Dave kind of goes through all the legal stuff first before it goes to of our lawyers. Yeah, he ends up ironing out like 90% of the bullshit with all their contracts and stuff, and then the lawyers just sort of touch it up. But he's really the guy who like handles all that shit for us.
Yeah, lawyers don't like to acknowledge any wrongdoing of any kind. but I've had a couple tell me, listen, you rewrote the contract a little bit, and I'm going to use the changes if you don't mind.
So where did you get the expertise to do that?
You know, if you become an infomaniac and you kind of, you know what it's like, the more you, if you want to find out how to buy a good TV, you know, with all the information available, you kind of go, oh, look, there's this size and then there's this resolution and then there's this color saturation and then there's the gammas and it just goes from there. And before you know it, the more you want to find out, the more you're going to uncover.
You can figure it out.
Yeah.
Talk about your dog business, how you guys came together. Justin had a great show on... it was primetime reality
CBS,
show.
Yeah,
and you were entertaining. Like, I thought it was the best show because it was informational, but you like incorporated funny and comedy, and you were entertaining, and it wasn't just like straight information.
Yeah, it wasn't like a How to Build a Ladder.
Yeah, did you sort of always? I mean, the dog walking thing, I think, was what started for you, right? And then you kind of, people started to recognize that you had this like sort of natural gift for like understanding dogs, right?
You're saying it perfectly. Yeah, exactly.
I cheated and read a little bit.
You know, if you tell anyone they have a natural gift, they're probably going to say you're saying it perfectly, right?
He'd be the first to shit on me, but I think
how do you stay partners with this guy?
Oh, dude, it's you know.
Well, I'll bring him, you know, I try to like, you know, lower expectations and trying to keep things. I'm a little bit literal, so I like to keep things as truthful as possible. And he can be salesy, so I'm always like, I wouldn't say that.
No, he's a straight, he's pretty honest dude.
I'm not saying he's dishonest. I'm saying that he could be salesy, which isn't necessarily a bad thing.
So it was the dog
listen,
thing.
When
that
someone's
was...
so agreeable to be told they have a gift with something, you go. Listen,
I don't have.
I want to buffer that.
You have a gift for legal.
See, I wouldn't call it a gift. I'd say like I'm an infomaniac, and if someone was annoyed,
what are
enough,
you gifted at? What would you be? What would be your gift?
I don't consider myself gifted.
But this is where this is where Dave will crawl under a rock. I find it annoying. He's incredible. He's a wordsmith, an incredible writer, and he's got an ability with understanding people that is that parallels my ability to understand dogs. And if you ask any of our friends or the people that know him or the people in the neighborhood, he is a very attuned psychological understanding of people from the inside and out, and it is a gift.
The one thing I'll acknowledge is I'm a numbers freak. Like that I am. That I know. Like I can, you know, I multiply, divide, I can sort of make correlations. That I had when I was a kid.
Were you educated, you know, in mathematics? Was that your major? Were you a writer?
No, you know, when I was a kid and we learned addition, like within an hour, I was faster than my father. I remembered everybody's license plates in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So that I know.
I'm going to annoy him.
I'm not going to do it. I'm just not
so
going to
do it. So annoying.
Right. And he will, you know, he'll make me like his pet.
Because if I go, hey, if I give him a three-digit number to multiply by a three-digit number, and he comes up with the answer like that, he gets annoyed that I'm going to make him do that right now.
I don't like it. But
I want to see it.
Yeah, no
but
shit.
You see, that's the point. Now you want to see it, and it becomes a whole thing, and then pretty soon, like, I don't like being like a racehorse.
It would have been easier if you just did it. Would have moved on.
Right,
from
but
that
it'd be easier if you just fun, if right, he had Dave? If he hadn't brought it up in the first place,
and it would be less fun if we just didn't do a podcast.
I won't be coerced or bullied into doing something I don't want to do, and I shouldn't be. And so just because I'm saying really calmly, like, hey, I'm just right, not going to do it. He knows
way.
I won't do
I'm going to pay you $222 times $424 for this podcast. So if you can tell me how much it is, I'll pay you that.
I wouldn't do it.
Yeah, okay.
So what? But is your background, in terms of your education, were you a philosophy? What did you major in school?
I wasn't a good student.
That's not what I asked you.
No, I know you didn't, and I will answer. And I appreciate you saying I didn't. That's not what you asked, because people don't answer questions.
You have to be
questions.
A guest, not a host.
Correct.
I'm just kidding. You do whatever you want.
I went to college, and I majored in math, because it was 8 classes. There was no writing, and you didn't have to attend. So that was what did it right. for me.
And then how did you come to, has writing always been your mainstay in terms of?
No, I didn't want to write. I ended up meeting a guy who was the deputy editor at Esquire, who used to give me the magazine, and I was not someone who liked to read. So he used to give me, oh, tell me what you think. And I used to just tell him it sucked, figuring out just by being dismissive, he'd leave me alone. And
but
then
you actually read it. You would read
no,
it.
No, I wouldn't read it. That was the point. You know, you pick up, like, people have different ways of picking up information, just like him. Like, he's intuitive with dogs. I think, you know what gifted to me means? In fact, Conor McGregor, the fighter, who you may not like his personality, but his coach said, it's not that Conor was so talented, but he had a real desire to work hard, which to me translates to talent or gifted. Mm. So Justin's sort of proclivity to be interested in what makes a dog tick and what makes it go is the gift.
And where did that come from for you, Justin? As a kid, were you raised with dogs in the house?
We had dogs in the house. I've always just had in not saying it the way that we've crafted me saying it in all these interviews where it's like I was doing comedy at night and then you know, working with dogs during the day, and when you come home, you're all lonely, and so I started watching those depressing animal commercials. I mean, we crafted answers to that specific question for like as a way to book shows and do interviews and shit like that. But the straight up truth is I was just always a really sensitive kid, had a difficult relationship with my dad. And I think that I always just viewed animals in this loving way and just wanted to take care of them and help them. And that stayed throughout my life. And as a result, I just think I was always artistic and always paid attention to details. And I think that my focus just, in my late 20s just became to wanting to help animals and save animals. And I was touched by the people who kind of selflessly worked in these shelters. I had this friend who started this sanctuary that I met when I was in AA. Remember Eddie Dogs, right, Dave?
Of course.
And I was like, I was so touched by what he was doing, and I was doing stand-up comedy.
By the way, Eddie Dogs was also Eddie Windows.
I know.
Same guy.
Some neighborhood guy who fixed windows and rescued dogs.
And what neighborhood are we talking about?
This is West Village. But he... but I was doing stand-up comedy, and
tell people where that, I mean, for people who aren't from New York. Where
downtown Manhattan on the west side.
Okay.
Lower West Manhattan. So, I was doing stand-up comedy, as you know, like just kind of grinding it out at the old Boston Comedy Club, mm-hmm. which was Comedy Village.
Yeah.
And I started rescuing dogs, and I rescued Chiquita, who's, you know, sitting here in the room with us right now. We're in my apartment.
Great dog.
Yeah. And I was doing personal training during the day, and I stopped doing personal training, and I was just started a dog walking route. And as a result of that, I just, you know, when you're walking dozens of dogs.
How do you get your first clients as a dog walker?
I think just personality.
No, but you are you putting an ad out somewhere? And people?
No, I was walking around with Chiquita, and then I got to, you know, you go to the dog park and you frequent it and you see people during the day. And then, you know, like I was saying, I started kind of getting a green thumb with dogs. And so people would ask me to handle their dogs or walk their dogs. And then I realized I had sort of a, I don't know. I just understood them really well.
By the way, isn't that a great answer? He, instead of kind of going, yes, I'm gifted and you're an expert and we gush over everybody, dude said, listen, I was a sensitive kid. I have an artistic bent. I'm attracted to animals. I felt this kinship and I gleaned some understanding and it grew from there. It's like, that's genuine.
And another thing that I wanted to touch on is you mentioned your relationship with your father was not great. Was it sort of, you know, he was demanding, you couldn't fulfill his...
No, he was MIA.
Oh, okay.
So
the reason I asked that is for the next question, which is, so what did the dog, that sort of relationships with dogs that you started to develop, or that, what did that give you that you weren't getting with your father?
It's nothing. It was more what I was giving them. It was more like, you know, I remember I was like a troubled kid and I was always in therapist's office and they would say, you know, you treat animals or teddy bears or the way you want to be treated. And for me, I think I was like this as a kid. Whenever I saw homeless people, I used to start crying and make my mom give them money.
Yeah.
Or whenever I saw like animals being hurt, I would ask if we could take them in. Like I was just always super sensitive to anything that was being hurt or mistreated or needed help. And I think that with dogs, I was like, I just kind of, this sounds so corny, but it's kind of like I'm like the stray dog in a way.
Mm.
And I just always wanted to take them in. So my point was.
That's, you see, this is where it gets interesting. You know, you're talking about somebody's empathic nature. We talk about anthropomorphization a lot, which when it can be unhealthy, you're ascribing, making a dog more human than it is. But when you think about somebody who feels maybe a little rejected, a little isolated, who has a dog in their life, and then suddenly he's saying, he's feeling this unconditional love and acceptance, and he went a step further, maybe because of an innate ability where he said, well, I'm going to give back to you. I want to understand you as well. And then you know, like a detective, you become a master of the obvious. You know, there's so many things like, you know, the consummate example would be a dog gets in a fight at the dog park. The owners separate them. What does the owner do? They pet the dog. Mm. They're there. It's okay. And it's like, what you're doing now is reinforcing the behavior. You're saying, nice job, way to fight.
Right.
So, it doesn't take a genius to go, oh, yeah, you're right. I shouldn't do that. But to figure it out in the first place makes sense. You have to be a little selfless in thought to think, like, how is the animal going to interpret this?
Right.
Most people don't get that far. I don't think that necessarily makes you gifted, but I think we're all a little bit afflicted in our own way, and it's our reactions to them. And you get the opportunity to be around animals where suddenly this thing's being fostered and nurtured in a positive way, saving a life and saving animals, and you know, now we got a good thing. So I think that's cool.
Yeah,
it's cool.
And you're relating to sort of what that homeless person's going through on some level, or the dog that's
I just felt bad for them. I'm touchy feely like
yeah.
that. But the cool thing was, you know, just to, you know, to take it from there and how, you know, how something can develop through practice. I was doing stand-up comedy and I was thinking I had a night, like a Wednesday night, and they were like, you know, how can you bring people in the club? And so I started Funny for Fido, which is, you know, the charity I do, which, you know, brings all these comics together to raise money for the animal shelters. And
right.
as that was developing, my dog walking became a dog training route. I mean, my dog walking route became dog training, and then it got too big for me to handle. So Dave came on to help me out with that because we've been friends for forever.
And how do you guys... friendship, where does that come from? Did you grow up together?
No, we met through mutual friends, just neighborhoody.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been friends for 20 years. Dave was sort of like a big brother to me. He was boxing at the time and he taught me how to box, and you know, we just became, I don't know, we always say, like, I always say he's the big brother I always wanted. He's the big brother I always needed, and he always says I'm the little brother he never wanted.
And yeah, the reason
what does boxing do for you? Or what did it do for you other than exercise?
I was a lifelong boxing fan, so, you know, I didn't have a dog, so I used to watch the fights, I think. No, I mean it. Like, the only good memories I can think of in my childhood is kind of that rare night where everyone went to sleep and there was a fight on, and yeah. I got to watch it uninterrupted. So, you know, I was athletic enough. And
but it was watching, I would beg my parents to stay up late to watch stand-ups on, like, Letterman or The Tonight Show, right? Like, whoever it was, even if I was little. There was just something about that. I didn't plan to be a stand-up then or anything like that. But what was it about watching boxing at night alone like that? What is it? Was it just...
You know, I don't know. It was just something I liked. And, you know, and I got in a lot of fights as a kid. And I was a lefty. I was a pitcher in baseball, so I could probably throw pretty well.
Mm.
So it was something, kind of an extension. Kids fight a lot.
Yeah.
You know, it's 1970s New Jersey. So
you're gonna get in fights.
That's
so,
what you did.
And so you guys come together, and then, but you, do you have a dog now, Dave?
No, no. My building is not dog friendly. I had a puppy when I was a kid that was kind of foisted upon me after no one wanted to take care of it, and then my dad got pissed at me one day, and we took the dog to the hospital, and I think it was like later. Experimented upon and all that. Oh, so yeah,
that's
yeah,
a fucking horrendous story.
Yeah, it's a horrendous story.
But Dave's got all our dogs. Like we're there's dogs. We're around them.
Yeah, I get to see dogs every day. It's very cool.
So you're sort of this is all kind of organically, as Dave was pointing out. Sort of this all organically happens for the right reasons, and then just keeps taking off. Because
well, yeah,
you're so
yeah, like I was saying, like I got you know I got pretty good as a dog trainer. Because listen, when you're some of the best dog trainers I know. Do not have business cards that say they're dog trainers. They just happen to be dog walk. Just like, hey, listen, I bet a nursery school teacher, a kindergarten teacher, is probably as qualified with kids as a lot of child psychologists.
Right.
Because, like, yeah, I'm around 15 kids every single day, all different walks of life. You know, so yeah. Dog walkers tend to be really excellent dog handlers for the most part. And you
but
know,
this speak to the sort of the touching aspect of this is just that is that you know I walk dogs and I became decent at it and I'm good at it I understand I've observed but he had an interest more than most and myself included in saying you know what's this dog communicating
so you would see some issues that a dog might have and then you yeah. would talk to their owner and say hey you know I noticed so and so's doing this
yeah but more pushy than that I kind of like I'm
that's the salesy part
I'm more arrogant I'm like listen like I don't know who's been training this dog but like let me take a shot at this I could fix this like I'm a lot more like
but
hey.
Where did you learn how to fix that that's the thing that blows
me away because I adopted difficult dogs Chiquita who's sitting here was not easy when I got her and
well,
so
I just saw you we before we went on the air Dave was outside and he was getting in a fight, as usual. And and then the buzzer rang, and Chiquita started barking, and you just went, you said, get up there and sit, meaning get up on this little couch. You can bark, but you can't, you have to sit. And the dog sat and barked. It was like the most specific
yeah.
instruction, and the dog followed it.
Yeah, I mean, listen.
How long did it take you to get the dog to do that?
Well, at this point, can I tell Giannis to shut up in the other room?
Yeah, go ahead.
And
you
just,
can yell it on the thing. It doesn't
matter. Hey, Giannis, we just finished our podcast, and Giannis is...
shut the door.
We just finished our podcast, and Giannis Pappas is taking a business
very,
call.
Very funny comedian.
Screaming in my bedroom.
He's fighting with his bookie.
He's fighting. But
we learned he does a good German accent.
He does. He hits the Z's.
He hits the Z's good.
But his was good, too, in its own.
My point was... so
mine was terrible.
So yeah, from having difficult dogs, and then I would foster dogs, and then I'd have dogs staying overnight doing... pet sitting here at night and then walking dogs you get and then I got called by you know I was training vets dogs I started going upstate to train herding dogs like in any of these situations because I've done so many it's just my communication skill with dogs got really good I'm like a person who's not born in the country goes lands there and learns to speak the language because just by doing it
so you're picking up you're communicating with the dog by their body language the look in their eye
everything.
All of this.
Yeah and think about everything. This like as somebody who says you know I'm maybe hyper empathic I've had my own hurt and I'm sensitive and now I get this unconditional love from a dog I feel kinship with this animal and I care enough to understand it you know you're looking at it from a completely different vantage ground than most people.
Yeah.
You know?
And you have a sensitivity to things that other people wouldn't probably.
Right. So there's that antenna. Now, if that makes you gifted, then fine. But my point is I personally recoil and bristle against these kind of lofty goals. And they not only that, they put a pressure on the individual.
Yeah.
As if they're supposed to meet some incredible expectation.
Which I really hated when we were doing our show because I feel like, listen, the show, I thought the show was great. I think they hired the right person to do it. I think... you know, with me as the host, I think I knew enough about training that I was going to do a good job when it came to training and I was going to be entertaining enough, all that kind of shit. Had Dave in my back pocket to help me, you know, finish the big words. Mm. But at the same time, like afterwards, there was this sort of like, you know, the dog guru of New York shit. And I felt like I had to live up to this expectation where I was like, I don't even want to be this person, and I kind of started to really resent it.
Do you,
right.
you, you, you feel really like it was overshadowing you as a stand-up comedian?
I wouldn't say, well, you know, you had the people on the internet who was like, you know, failed stand-up comic becomes, I was like, all right, suck my dick. There was that, but there was like, I don't know if it overshadowed that. Like, I've always been passionate about both things. Like, I was trying to finish saying, so Funny for Fido, as Funny for Fido got bigger, I started training more and doing more comedy. Those things, there was like a confluence, which is like my favorite word, of like comedy and working with animals. Like, there was, so when it came time to do that show, and they're like, hey, could you host a show about dogs and train them and make it fun? I was like, I've been doing this already for 7 years. Yeah. So I don't think that it was like, I don't think that it overshadowed that. I think just standalone, the sort of the world of like dog trainers and dog people are like, we make a joke. We're like, they're the cattiest people ever. They're annoying. And
really?
I think they're really annoying.
You mean
and
because
I just
there's a jealousy? And
there's oh that. Here's the deal. You also have a lot of anthropomorphizers. So suddenly, if you know you have this type of collar on, you're going to kill the dog. It's like, no, it might hurt you a lot, but it doesn't mean that it's going to hurt this dog. The other thing too,
and
is
by that you mean elaborate on that for the listeners a little
well
bit.
People, so people suddenly you know
project their own feelings onto dogs.
Exactly, and people assume that you know a dog's skin is exactly the same as a human. You know, it's like, well, listen, a dog could probably handle a prong collar a hell of a lot better than the human could. Conversely, it's not going to do nearly as well as shampoo because it has a different pH level and less layers of skin,
right?
So you know you're going to massage a pert into your dog's scalp and it's gonna burn its skin because of the acidity, and conversely you're gonna freak out because someone's using a collar that, you know, dogs carry each other around by the neck. The it was problematic because you entered into a massive growth industry, and once a industry starts growing,
you mean dog training,
the pet industry, not dog training specifically.
Post 9/11, the pet industry, while everything else was plummeting, like, you know, dogs and alcohol was just going through the roof.
Do you think tied to 9/11?
It went from, Dave is all theory that, but it went from something like, it went from like 8 billion to like 50 billion in the last.
In a little less than 10 years.
Less
so.
Than 10 years.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, it's like it's 64 now.
So it's not truly explosive, but a genuine growth industry. You know, no one, it was not, you know, a gold rush, but close enough. So what happens now is, what do you want to do to make a business model go? It's, I need differentiation. So now all of a sudden my way is the way, and to be sound smart, it's always easy to be dismissive. This sucks, this sucks, this sucks. If I'm telling you everything sucks, I must know something. So it became easier to be derisive and disparaging of other people's work and to sit there and proclaim your own. So a trainer sees a guy on television and says, I'm going to differentiate myself and become superior by criticizing somebody who's in the public eye. Very easy to do. It's called hating.
It's also called social media.
I mean,
the problem with social media is everybody's got an opinion and there are haters for everybody about it.
Yeah, and it's infectious. So once one person does, you know, like Caesar came under like a world of scrutiny and you know, probably, I think, undeservedly to a large degree.
Yeah.
So it happened to him too. And that's why I was saying, to my point earlier, that's why I would bristle at saying, oh, yes, I'm, you know, I thank you for calling me gifted. I agree I'm an expert.
Yeah, no. I mean,
it's like, let me tell you something. Dude is the ultimate dog enthusiast. That's what he is. He's not a veterinarian. He's not a behaviorist. He doesn't have multiple postgraduate degrees in any of the sciences, and he shouldn't. You know, he's a legitimately accomplished dog trainer, a dog care professional, a dog lover who has access to information and people that know about everything you need to know. So as a general contractor in the realm of pets and dogs, you are not going to do better on earth than him. And that's a big compliment.
That's why I like also our podcast, because when we first were going to do it, we were like, I was so dogged out, Paul. I was like, I don't want to do another dog expert podcast. I'd rather do something that's more lighthearted. And the way we do it now, it's like you were just on it. It's like, you know,
great,
it's meant
man.
To be a little bit funnier. And we do it more from an enthusiastic point of view rather than, you know, we're the ultimate authorities here, which sucks.
Yeah. I mean, and when you said that, you know, after the show or the show was sort of putting you in a light that you were bristling at, which is sort of like the dog guy or whatever, however you described it, like what was wrong with that? I mean, the show was really well done. You were great in it. That's part of who you are. You're also a comedian. So why shy away from that?
I'm not shying away from that so much. I think that first of all, I got a little dogged out. That's the first thing. It's like, you know, answering interviews about like, yeah, and this one is not included in that, but answering like interviews like, so as the dog expert, like you communicate with, can you tell us about your powers in a way?
Yeah.
Like that shit got annoying.
Yeah.
And doing the more, and a lot of the things that came with the job aspect of it, like I always liked training dogs, which I still do, and I think I'll always do. But you know, doing like a lot of the stuff we would do on TV when we do the morning shows. I started getting really tired of that. And, you know, I started getting, just the identity of like Justin Silver, dog expert, just got to be a little bit tired for me. And I stopped having fun. I stopped having fun.
Think about, you know, the crosshairs you're putting yourself in. You know, there are people who are PhDs in animal behavior, and now all of a sudden, you know, if someone doesn't agree with what you say, on what authority are you stating this?
And there may be jealousy there because
of course.
He's got a major TV show on a major network.
And you have a growth industry where everyone's trying to put a flag in the ground and claiming something. The reality is as kind of the infomaniac, a lot of these people didn't know what the fuck they were talking about. So, I mean,
but what was your learning curve? Because he's going into this first season, he's just in it for the love of it. But then it sort of sounds like it moves to another level of intensity. And you're with him, as he said, sort of, you know, in all different capacities, I assume. So what is your learning curve as you're moving through pretty fast waters? Right now you're on CBS. You've got a show. You, Dave, are involved in that in some way. Like, what opened your eyes? What was surprising to you? What did you have to figure out quickly? Any of that?
No, I didn't have any. You know, I'm not. I am the guy you have to check for a pulse now and again. So it didn't. None of it really bothered me. And I wasn't the one on camera. Let's face it. You know, that's not easy. Did you want to finish something? By the way, I'm sorry.
That you were saying. No, I kind of wanted to jump in with Paul asking you that question because that's. I feel like, you know, a lot of times I have the perspective of your position, the way you have perspective of mine. The cool thing is that Dave had been working with me with dogs for a few years beforehand.
Wasn't a few years.
Was it a year?
Months.
No.
Yep. I started December 2011.
I'm thinking of the book. But he'd been working with, yeah, but you still knew a lot of my situations and, you know, you've always been a sounding board for me. You've been deeply involved in my life for a large portion
right.
of my life.
But to his question, which was what came as a surprise or what was...
Well, for you, I mean, he's going through a life change in terms of, you know, he's doing this thing with dogs, but then it becomes sort of defines who he is and he's the right. dog expert or whatever. And you're along with him in whatever, however you want to describe your relationship in that context. That had to be sort of a new territory for you as well as Dave. And
yeah.
I'm curious what was new for you and how you negotiated those waters for yourself.
Difficult, man. It was fucking difficult for the two of us.
Well, no, it was. I was annoyed, you know, like I felt like I was more consigliere than Major Domo.
Right.
I was sort of, you know, here was the funny thing was they were so, for example, on the show, they wanted to create reality, right? Mm. We wanted unscripted. We want everything kind of off the cuff. And I was like, listen, you want reality? Dude's been stealing my material for 20 years, you know, so why can't I tell him, like, hey, man,
no,
you could
you
say this.
The backstory about how they weren't even allowed.
Well,
let me give backstory.
It doesn't need a whole lot of backstory. They were trying to separate. I was going to transition it to. So they wanted to kind of separate us.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, he doesn't, as he stated, he said, I don't need him to hold my dick to piss, but, you know, I like him having around. And that's, you asked me what I needed. I said, I need my guy there. So I was like, yeah, let me finish his fucking sentence now and again, even if it's off camera, so he knows what to say a little more, because he likes it. Mm. You know, he thinks it comes out.
What happened was when we first got the show, right? I was like, Dave, I think they have a good shot at this. So he sat down and wrote this pitch with me, like what I was going to say when I went in with the executives, which is the thing that they bit at. Mm. You know what I mean? And when we actually did the sizzle reel, that was the thing that went to test. They a lot of the segments like were lines that I was like, me and Dave wrote those lines out so they'd be funny for on camera.
Yeah.
And then when it actually came time for, you know, when it actually came time to shoot and it was like, it was shot out of a cannon, you know, they were like, all right, the show starts tomorrow and you have 57 days straight. They were like, what do you need? And they were like, you know, they were basically asking like, what kind of cream I want in my coffee? I was like, none of that. I was like, I need my dude with me so we can make this the product that you guys actually bought.
Right.
And Dave had a great phrase. He would say, you know, they think you're trying to like pull your friend into the sandbox, and you could like he never cared about being on camera right. or anything like that. We just wanted to put out the best product we could,
right.
and he wanted me to look good. And I was like, in order to do that, I kind of need my boy just standing right to the right. And they would do shit that was as difficult as sitting in between us during lunchtime, so Dave couldn't like I couldn't bounce ideas off of him. And the reality was, when we are training
so
dogs.
Stupid.
We do work together.
Yeah.
We did work together. And what I was also going to say was, you know, my favorite thing out of all the things that we've kind of made together out of like the dog world was our book. because after the show, we trained so many dogs together. I mean, it's hundreds at this point, but so many dogs together, and he was with me through it all, and you hear how he's got this analytical mind that can really delineate the things that I know how to do sort of more physically and organically. He can
synthesize.
He could put it into layman's terms real well and sort of speak in my voice.
One of those big words.
There you go. So when it came time to write our book, you know, they found out we weren't getting a second season. And so what they did was our editors were out to lunch, which was a pain in the ass. But in another way, it was great because Dave just got to write the book that I'd always wanted to write.
Right.
And so even though all the theories
back
in
up,
there,
you mean because the show wasn't going to second season, the editors sort of lost a little interest. Or
That's a story in itself. Yeah. I mean, Simon & Schuster is owned by CBS. So the fact that one hand didn't know what the other was doing, they didn't know there was a second season. I, through Gray Channels, was actually learned before he did that there was no second season. So I said, let's cut this fucking book deal in a hurry. And we did. So that's how that came to pass.
But you got to write the book you wanted to because it was hands off.
Dave really wrote the book based on all the stuff that he watched and helped and assisted with me doing over the past year and a half.
Right.
Yeah, that was an interesting process because I had not only not written really a book before, you know, I didn't know a hell of a lot about dogs, if you think about it. Like, I'm a year into this, you know, as a walker, basically, and hanging out with him. So, you know, I hate to say it, he was not helpful in terms of getting, like, hard information to me. You know, nobody was.
But you had been around it enough that you knew.
Well, I'd been to a number of dog training sessions, and I had input. You know, I used to kind of deal on the people side of things, saying, this is where, you know, he's like, I know what to do with the dog. Well, we're only as good as what we can tell the people, the owner, to do with the dog, because they're going to have to implement some of these protocols afterwards. And if they're not emotionally capable of letting their dog, you know, not having their dog on a couch, this certain things are going to persist.
Yeah.
So we've got to be able to work with them as well. So that had always been my input. But now I had to kind of write a book in a hurry, and it needed to be, in my opinion, bulletproof, because I didn't want to come under the scrutiny that he was already under.
Oh, right.
So I'm like, all right, let's get down to the brass tacks here. And then it was just kind of a lot of information gathering, you know, scientifically and other. So at least I knew, you know, I had my father was a neurologist, neuropathologist, and I had a little bit of a background in the sciences and mental. So I was able to kind of go whip all that information up. And the more I covered, I was like, no one knows what the fuck they're talking about. So between that and what we had done experientially and knowing him as well as I did, then
you
it was,
had all the components.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's my. I'm
telling
you,
it could have used an editor.
It's called The Language of Dogs, the book. Everybody, you should definitely pick it up. I mean, but you've like not totally. You still embrace the dog thing, but I mean, you're a stand up. I look at you as a stand up.
Yeah.
First and foremost.
Thank you.
And I know what you mean, though. People can sort of define you by this other thing.
Yeah, it was just such a big thing.
Well, yeah.
And it is such a thing.
I mean, look,
you
had a TV show on CBS because of it.
But even before then, like when it was like, you know, all my friends who were, I mean, Giannis just walked in the room. He's sitting right here. Like me and Giannis, he'd always call me with like dog questions and stuff, even when we were doing comedy.
Giannis
Pop
is a very funny comedian who's been on the phone trying to track down this dog fucker guy in Germany.
But our
I'm gonna have you on the podcast. You can jump in now. I want to get you on one-on-one and do your thing.
But the reason Giannis is the other host on our podcast, we've been talking dog stuff since way before the show. He wanted to actually make a dogs in the city show years before they actually picked it up. He's like, yeah, I got a great. He's like, I got it. When you had Ditch Films, you were like, oh, I got an idea. We'll do you as like this like cocky dog.
Right. Yeah.
You had the idea for that
they
had.
Yeah. Well, you know, you can't run away from who you are.
No,
like, that's why I think like you should embrace both. You know?
I do.
Comedy and dogs.
Yeah. No, I do.
Great things.
Well, listen, that's what Funny for Fido is. I mean, I've been. That's why Funny Fido.
How long you been doing that now?
2005,
And people can go to funnyforfido.com.
Funnyforfido.org. And not only do we do the podcast, which is new, but I do all the live shows and I bring the country's best comedians together. And all the money goes to the rescue shelter. So it's like comic relief. Like you have the dogs there at the show and then the comics come up and perform. And all the money we raise goes directly to the animal shelters, and you can adopt dogs at the show. It's cool, man. But I've been doing that for, well, now we do it monthly at the stand, so you know, we bang a show out a month. But before then, it was just annually.
And so, is there any situation with a dog now that you can't, have you seen it all pretty much?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, pretty much. I mean, like, you know, I get called for everything across the board. There's not many situations I turn down. I mean, listen, there's things in the city that you're not going to see that you'd see in the country. It's like, you know, for the most part, it's like your basic, you know, dog aggression, leash aggression, separation anxiety. Dogs don't have to walk.
Yeah, the dog we adopted was chewing. They said he chews on the leash. So my wife was like, okay, I'm just going to buy a metal leash.
You can teach him to not do that.
And then my wife got him to stop, got the dog to stop within like a week.
You know what? What is deviant, at least statistically speaking, is after the show, you kind of have this artificial exposure to the world. You know, it's just now you get training requests. So I think what's interesting, at least, is I can't imagine that there's too many trainers that are going to do, say, call it 200 dogs in a year. You know, individual cases that are separate and distinct. You know, you tend to kind of have, you have your classes, you sort of have the generic stuff that comes through the door. But we had the breadth and depth of what we contended with in a relatively short period of time probably would add to somebody's expertise. You know, there's that story, like Bill Gates, I think when he was in high school, had access to like the world's most potent, the most capable supercomputer. So suddenly this guy was allowed to see go play with a military computer when he was 16. That's so unique, and it gives him kind of a head start and a different perspective. Well, if you think about it, you got a national television show, and suddenly you're training this many dogs this quickly.
Yeah.
It puts you on a learning curve that I don't think can be – probably hasn't been replicated by too many people.
That's why I'm glad we wrote the book a year later, because I was like, dude, the shit I learned –
just in that period of time.
The stuff I look at the show, I would have done so many things I learned since then. It would have been a different. There's so many things I learned after the show because we were training so many fucking dogs, and we were doing. You know, we'd go on these day trips where we'd go upstate, then to Long Island, then to Jersey. You know, we just do intensives with people for the day and then after that, we had our own TV show in China, in Hong Kong. Which was my favorite version because we got to do everything together, even though we fought the
kitschy.
Whole time. And it was funny. It was kitschy. They were definitely...
We didn't fight. You were just very unhappy.
I was unhappy. You know, that show was my favorite because we knew
Why
so much more.
Why were you unhappy,
more.
Real quick?
A number of reasons, but it was like Hong Kong was a tough place for me. It was a tough place to be. It's tough there, man. It was
how
like,
long did you shoot the show there?
It was only 10 days, but it was 10 days of pure nausea that was followed by food poisoning, which if you want to see the story on that, I do it on my act. But the cool thing about the show was like, you know, first of all, there was a language barrier that made things different and how out to lunch they are. I mean, I don't mean to say that literally with dogs. You know, a lot like they kind of really don't know what they're doing for the most part.
They're about 30 years back.
Oh, Jesus.
It's like Canada with fashion for men.
The cool thing was, you know, it really was more of the reality. Like, they were not up our ass. They let us do what we wanted to do. Dave got as much camera time as I did, which was cool. And it was like, you know, he got to drop his science and use his big brain for stuff where when it came to like Q&A stuff that I don't know the science about.
They ask weird questions.
Yeah, like can I feed my dog Chinese soup?
And can you feed them? Can we feed them the traditional Chinese soup?
They had weird situations, man. But we got to do some cool stuff.
The book sort of, you had this learning curve where The end product is a book that's
the book
much
is my
better fa- than it
the book
been.
Is if the book is my favorite thing. Forget the TV shows, forget all that stuff. If I was like, you know, the thing that represents like what we do dog training wise, all the theories I have, if I had to give somebody one thing to be like, hey, this will teach you all the things that I would want you to know, it's that book. And we're not making any money off of it because they gave us way too big of an advance for me to ever see a dollar off that thing. So if people go buy it, it's not because I'm trying to sell something.
All right, well, so go buy the book. Where can people see you doing stand-up, or what do you want to plug stand-up-wise?
Everything is on my social media and my website, which is at I Am Justin Silver. And for Funny for Fido, it's at Funny for Fido or funnyforfido.org.
Yeah. And Dave is opening a law firm.
Yes.
And
Dewey, Cheatham, and Howe.
There we go. And I'll be your paralegal.
There you go.
And anything you want to plug? Anything you got going on?
No, I prefer not to be contacted. Although I have a running joke. I'm kind of a fan of horology, so I like watches.
All right. Oh yeah. I'm a big watch.
Oh, we could talk about that. Yeah, so I keep saying to Justin, like, maybe at the end he could say something about luxury watches and buying and selling at the end of the dog podcast, but he hasn't bit yet.
No, you should. I got a show part, and I got a.
You know what? I'm gonna start doing it. I'm gonna start telling.
I wanted to come up with a. It wouldn't work, but I thought the name The Watchdog would be good.
Perfect. Yeah. I think that's so badass.
There's actually a restaurant in Connecticut that I go to called Dog Watch. And I'll get you a t-shirt. Then that'll be your yin and yang right there. Okay. I'm going to get Dave a t-shirt that says Dog Watch on it. And Giannis is looking at pictures in a book right now. I'm sorry, like, you were
about pit bulls.
Oh, what's up? It was like I was the audience for this
podcast.
You were in
the thing, and then you were out and whatever. But I'm going to have you on a separate podcast, just you and me.
I'd love that.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we'll talk shit.
Just two guys hanging out.
I love it. Looking at German porn. All right, everybody. Justin Silver, Dave Donnefeld, Giannis Pappas, and Chiquita. See you guys next week.
A Westwood One podcast production.